Hey everybody, and welcome back to Fire Keeper's Memories. We're so happy that you decided to pull up a chair and join us for this week's episode. How's it going, Pat?
It's going all right.
Good. Have a good week.
I did some a wrap up last night for I facilitated a group of black men and police officers as part of a organization to develop police and community trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we got together last night and had a wrap up meeting. Just got some good things happened, some intense things, and
now you're here.
Yeah.
Now you're here at the fire.
Now I'm here trying to dig deeper into a story people might not be aware of.
Yeah. So that's what we do every week, right? We bring these I don't know if average is the right word to describe, you know, just normal, everyday folks. Bring them in here into the studio and we hear about their extraordinary stories with the whole idea that everybody has a story if you just ask. So, again, we're happy that you are coming back here to join us. And we hope that you've learned some a little bit along the way and that you are ready to meet one of our next characters. Uh-huh. As he raises his eyebrows at me across the table. So I'd like to introduce all of you to a man that I've known since I was in the eighth grade. And when they moved into town, his oldest became one of my very best friends. So welcome, Mr. Matt Thornton.
Thank you. Welcome to you, too.
Thanks. Well, I'm so happy that you said yes. Oh. I asked you to join. You know, in our small town, we have just so many people that have these incredible stories. And yours is one that's always just kind of fascinated me from afar. You know, when you guys moved into town, and I won't give away too much of your story yet, but when y'all moved into town and I met your oldest, Emily, you know, her dad worked in Chicago, and that was like the big city. And like he would leave every week and he'd go work in Chicago, and he had like this drum set downstairs. It was like so cool.
I do remember hearing about this.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's dig into your story, I suppose.
Okay.
And tell the people here a little bit about yourself. I guess we'll start there.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm an artist. And I've been pursuing some kind of art forms my whole life and trying to make a living at it, really. And I've been lucky enough to be reasonably successful in some of those endeavors. And when I first met you, I had a recording studio in Chicago, and that was for our small town Buchanan. That was some, you know, pretty wild stuff.
It was wild stuff.
Yeah. He does what? Mm-hmm. He goes to Chicago and records music every day.
Yes.
And people didn't know how to handle that.
No.
Like, how can you do that? You know.
Uh-huh. That's funny. So was that the perspective? So I guess, yeah, from your perspective, that's interesting. So you moved into Buchanan in the 90s.
Yes.
Right? Into our little small town. So what was it like coming into a small town, which you are now, you know, in the fabric, woven into the fabric of our small town. But
yeah.
25 years ago, yeah. What was it like coming into a small town that is pretty tribal in nature? You know, I guess that would be the way to describe it.
Well, it's funny. I'm from a small town originally as well, and I'm kind of a small town person. So it wasn't a culture shock for me or anything like that. We moved from a little town outside of Ann Arbor called Manchester. And my understanding has always been, like, my kids will be from Buchanan, but I will never be because I was already, you know, 40 when
sure.
I moved here, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was, you know.
So what did people do in the town where you grew up? What were the... Were they community U of M? Was it
an
academic town?
I'm actually from the Detroit area originally.
Okay.
You know, suburbia, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. But then when I first got married and had kids, we had four kids, and Emily was the oldest. And we lived in a little town outside of Ann Arbor, and I was in a theater and worked in mm-hmm. a theater there, and then worked in advertising at an advertising agency there. And then basically we moved to Buchanan in order for me to be closer to Chicago
mm-hmm.
because I got in the jingle business and was doing commercial music. And But I wanted to stay small town. I wanted my kids to grow up in a small town.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it was. So we moved here. And it wasn't, it wasn't a culture shock or anything. Buchanan mm-hmm. is a very cool little town. I love it.
It's the coolest.
It is the coolest. And
but why Buchanan of all the towns? I mean, were you looking for someplace between there and Chicago?
Absolutely.
What drew you?
And I was driving back and forth. This is a good question. It's funny. I was driving back and forth from Ann Arbor area, and it's a long drive. And I was like, I had a studio in Chicago. I was driving in on Tuesday from Ann Arbor, and then staying till Friday, and I'm going, oh, I don't want this. I want to, I want to see my kids every day, And so I was looking at all these small towns in Indiana and around Michigan, and where am I going to land? And one day I get off US 12 because I used to drive 12 all the time, and you don't know, at least back then, you don't know Buchanan is here. Necessarily.
Right.
I get off 12 and I start driving, and it's a beautiful evening. The sun is setting. I go through this little town. I went, this is kind of pretty. I like it here. I turn around. I go back through a town again. I'm going towards the sun now, back because the sun's setting in the west. And I have been driving home, to Ann Arbor. And the sun is kind of in my eye. And then I get downtown and there's a building that comes, and the building kind of blocks out the sun as I get closer to it. And it's the Electra Voice R&D building.
Really?
And I went, my people,
right.
This is where they invented their microphones, and the speakers. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my God, this, you're kidding me. This is Buchanan. This is a place, cause it's an hour and a half from Chicago. I can drive in and out. Nice little small town. My kids can go to school here. And so that's how I found Buchanan.
That's so funny.
And that very night, I saw the house that we bought.
Yeah.
I drove around town and went, oh, look at that place.
Beautiful place. Yeah, with a pool in the back right next to the middle school. Couldn't be beat.
Right. And the kids, my oldest was in eighth grade, So that's how we found Buchanan.
Yeah. That's a great story.
Isn't that great?
So were the kids excited to move?
No.
but kids, the microphones were invented there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly. But dad, it was a little scary, Sure. I mean, the littler ones, my son was like 4, so he didn't know, But the older ones, it was, a little shocking for them to leave their friends and, come to a new place. And
eighth grade is tough too. Middle school is tough to come into. Yeah,
sure.
She's a cool kid though. So she did just fine. I was the first one to introduce myself to her.
I believe
it. We talked for the first time because I thought she was super cool because we all wore Adidas shoes back then, like all of us with the white stripes. But she came in wearing some black combat boots, and I was like, this chick is kind of cool. She's kind of edgy.
That's really funny.
All right, so let's back up a little bit. So you came to Buchanan 20-30 years ago now?
whatever it is
we just had our 20th 26, reunion so yeah. 20, yeah all right so but before that, I guess let's go back and talk about, as you were becoming an adult, what field do you go into? How does that career start?
Well, I've always been a musician, and I went to school and got a music degree. And I was involved, I was chasing that down, through the years, playing in bands and stuff like that. And so I was always interested in trying to make a living doing that. But then when you get a family, you start having kids and boom, boom, boom. I got to get a real job, and I have to be responsible. And so I went into advertising because I figured it was a way to do the arts but still get paid.
Sure.
So I did pretty well at that in Ann Arbor and got involved with some pretty big ad campaigns and whatnot.
The Noid?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Noid, please?
Do you have to talk about the Noid a lot?
I was waiting to talk about the Noid.
Yeah, you steered me back there. See, I wouldn't have gone on my own. That's too funny. A former life. Yes, I was involved with that. Well, I did a lot of advertising for Domino's Pizza back then, and that was one of them.
It was huge.
Campaign. And so you were doing the sound. and the music?
Or well, I was the writer. I was a writer, you know, and a producer of the commercials and whatnot. This was before. So, yeah, I was involved with a lot of, well, different campaigns of different people, too. But that was my start in advertising, and the Noid campaign was, you know, one of them. And it was, I don't know if famous is the word. It was infamous.
It was awesome. It was one of the... It was one of
wrecked
the,
my career. It,
I thought that... Well, I thought it was pretty dang cool.
Well, thank you.
It did it...
it's still alive. I mean...
Right.
It shows up.
That's successful, right? That's a measure of success?
Two video games.
Right. It's in video games. It shows up on, you know, on TV shows still, you know, weird enough.
Were you the creative designer behind that concept?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that come
to... Several people involved with it.
How did that, like, how do you come up with that idea at the table? Do you remember?
Yes.
Well, it, you know, yeah. I mean, that's a hard question to answer real quickly. The challenge at the time was Domino's Pizza was small compared to Pizza Hut.
Mm-hmm.
Pizza Hut was huge. Domino's Pizza was small. So we had to come up with something that made a lot of noise. And the idea was we need awareness, you know. And then they had a bunch of market research that said, you know, hey, delivering pizzas is really cool, but stuff happens to it. You know, it gets wrecked while you're delivering it. So we embodied this character to talk about that, and it was one of those oddball things that just sort of, a lot of people liked it because it, you know, it was weird, you
right?
know? And I always said it, you know, captured the angst of the 80s, you know.
How so? The angst.
The angst of the 80s, because it was a kind of a, you know, an angry little character, you know. But yeah, it was just a thing. It was a character, and. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I always thought that was such a such a cool thing. I mean, and it certainly did create noise. And I thought it was pretty successful.
Well, so. Yeah. I mean, Domino's Pizza awareness went through the roof.
Right.
And
it was viral before viral was a thing.
Yes. You know, because it was, like I say, infamous. You know, it was odd. You know, and it wasn't. I don't think the advertising community ever really thought it was great. You know, it didn't make me any money.
Well, dang.
But here it is 20, 30 years later, and people do remember it.
They do.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
Because if you think about what was Domino's Pizza advertising last year?
No idea.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
So there you go.
There you go. So what are some of the other campaigns that you remember? Maybe some of your favorites?
Well, I worked for 20 some years on, the Toucan Sam campaign. I did a lot of Kellogg's work after that. Well, that's when I left the agency in Ann Arbor and started my studio in Chicago to do music. And then I worked on Rice Krispies and Fruit Loops forever and Wrigley's and McDonald's and a lot of really big campaigns as a musician.
Sure.
And wrote a lot of the music for those.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much jingles, because jingles during that period of time kind of went away, but it was, I got to be known as the orchestral cartoon guy, you know, for doing Fruit Loops and Rice Krispies. Mm-hmm. We did Rice Krispies in my basement, you know, back in Buchanan.
Yeah.
And my son Sean was, one of the three, you know, Rice Krispies
characters.
And helped put him through college, right? you know,
I didn't
Snap,
know
Crackle,
that.
And Pop. He was Snap, yeah.
So would you wind up workshopping cereals with your kids sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
And so what do you think of this? And
absolutely, you know. And we would do weird things like record. I'd have the kids running around in the basement on their bicycles and recording it, because in the commercial, the Snap, Crackle, and Pop would be on bicycles.
Yeah,
and we'd have the sound of it. We would actually do practically, you know. And I had a studio in my basement then. And that's when, you know, it got to be talked about in Buchanan.
Well,
studio in this guy's basement. And
right.
It's still there.
Yes. Hmm. Well, M's bedroom was in the basement too for a while.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Like, we would go down and we'd be like, man, what's he up to now? What's he up to today?
There.
He's got drums in the basement. Who has drums in the basement in Buchanan? Yeah.
So your kids' lives were made different in a lot of ways by growing up with somebody whose job it was to come up with another idea every day.
Well, it was interesting. Well, you know what? It wore off on
very unique in Buchanan.
Yeah.
Because of four kids, three of them are self-employed in creative sort of deals, you know? But that's kind of cool, I think.
It is cool. Yeah, we'll definitely talk more about that. I want to get to that part, too. So you're doing the jingles, then you have your studio in Chicago. What makes you open up your studio in Chicago, and what was the focus of that?
Well, I mean, you know, the focus was just trying to make money, you know, as an artist.
So why did you feel like you had to be in Chicago or open it up there?
Well, that's a central, at least back in the 80s and 90s. You know, you're going to go where the gigs are, right? And they weren't in Ann Arbor. And like I say, we moved to Buchanan so that I could have a straight shot into Chicago because it's a hotbed. It was a hotbed of advertising. And I, you know what? I was a kind of a mid-level music producer in Chicago, not one of the top big guys, but I made a good living at it. And we had, you know, we did work that was pretty well known, you know, with the Kellogg's especially. And I did that for 25 years or so until maybe 6-7 years ago. I had done it before I moved here. But then, and it was a career. And there was a scene back then where agencies would call you and say, hey, I want to, you know, do a demo for this. And there were, you know, professional musicians walking around with beepers and you beeped them and then they came to your place, and it was all this kind of happening music scene stuff that was really, really kind of cool and pre-digital, you know. And now the world has really changed in that period. As a matter of fact, one of the guys I worked with a lot, a bass player, Bob, has since gone out and he's been playing with the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, and he's been on tour for the last 4 or 5 years, world tour with them. And they interviewed him in a Chicago Tribune a few months ago when the band came through. And he said, yeah, we had this whole jingle scene, and then it all sort of blew up, and we all lost our jobs. You know, so I was lucky enough to hook up with Brian Wilson, and I went on the world tour. But that's what kind of happened. The advertising scene really changed in, you know, let's see, you know, like year 2005, 2010. It slowed down. It became a different thing, you know, and than it had been in the 80s and 90s. Let's put it that way.
So less people drove. I mean, less people involved. I mean,
More people involved. More people involved. Everybody involved. Now the creative people at the agencies are doing the tracks on their own garage band things, you know. And it's kind of like photography. Everyone's a photographer now, right?
Sure.
You know, because your phone is a really great camera. And, you know, and the way that people, at least from my point of view, the way people think creatively in the advertising industry changed. It became less of a, hey, let's think of something new, and more of a, let's mash up three or four ideas that already exist. Let's, you know, and I think it's partly due to things like Photoshop and GarageBand, where you can digitally take things and put them together and it looks really good because it's professionally done. Right. It's not just a sketch on a piece of paper. When I first drew the Noid, it was horrible. I mean, you looked at it, it was a bad sketch with a, you know, in a pencil, you know, it could have been written, done on a napkin or something. And it was not a piece of art, you know, it was an idea, you know. But now in the aughts, you know, 2005, 2008 or something, when an agency creative went to present something, it had to look great. You know, and so they would just take photographs or take pieces of film, take existing music, you know, and put it together, and it would be, wow, look, we got Michael Jackson track here, you know, that kind of thing. And so for us jingle guys, we were now competing against Michael Jackson and, you know, Ray Charles and you know, Billy Joel, you know, and stuff. You know, how can you win that one? And then I was getting older, you know. I mean, I was, you know, you get to be 40, 50 years old, and guess what? You might not be cool anymore, you know.
That doesn't apply to you.
Oh, yeah, thank
you. T-Bird.
Well, I think it actually did. But the industry changed, you know. So, I mean, I was really lucky. I had a great long run doing pretty cool music, getting paid well to play music during the day. you know, and put kids through college and stuff like that. It was really an interesting and cool thing. But like many things in the world, it changed and it moved on and it evolved into something else. And younger people took mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so I slowly started moving out of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Now, during this whole time, you were a musician in your own right, creating your own music as well, right? Sure. Not just necessarily for jingles. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I've been a songwriter for a long time, but, you know, nothing famous. And played in bands, you know, some of them almost famous, but nothing huge. Right? Uh-huh. I did have a good career as a recording person. People would call me to play guitar and bass on records and stuff like that.
Which what are really some of your cool. favorite ones?
Well, I've played with the Ides of March, you mm-hmm. know, a bit. And Kathy Broughton is a Chicago artist I played with a mm-hmm. lot and produced mm-hmm. some records for her. Mostly small time stuff.
Yeah.
I had a band called the Bucktown Ramblers.
Yeah.
And we played around for a few years and slowly people move away. Sure. You know, mm-hmm. and bands do that.
Are you hiring new members right now?
No.
I don't we'll know how to see. Play an instrument, but yeah. Pat does.
I do, but you wouldn't.
I would who knows?
I wouldn't have you a second know. Interview at least.
first, right. 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 You know, that part of my life has slowed down a bit. You know, uh-huh. But you never know. You never know. There might be some music in the future. We'll see.
Now, what were the challenges as you moved here, running a full-time studio in Chicago and then raising four kids and being involved in their lives and involved in the community as you were?
Well, it's tough, you know. I mean, like I said earlier, you got to go where the gigs are. So I was in Chicago, but I was driving there every day, mm-hmm. you know, and that was rough. Hour and a half, and then it got to be an hour and 45 minutes, and then it got to be 2 hours because more and more people were doing it, and the population has exploded over the last 25 years, it seems to me. So that was tough, but you know, I love Buchanan because the kids could all play sports here. It wasn't a high school of 4,000, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a really cool and great community, you know, the whole it takes a village to raise a child kind of thing. Well, we have that in spades around here.
For sure.
You know, yeah. It's my kids had, you know, a wonderful mother and 50 fathers.
Yes.
You know, including your dad.
Yes,
you know?
For sure.
And the church, you know, that we belong to. People mm-hmm. all, you know, they watch out for your kids and there's a wonderful community here. And so I was home a lot. That was the idea, you mm-hmm. know. I'm not the kind of musician who was out on the road or anything like that. I was, you know, home every night
mm-hmm.
and at the games, you know,
yeah.
and doing all mm-hmm. that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole idea of living here, you know, and for that 20 or so years, I drove to Chicago and back.
But, yeah. Wow, 20 some years.
That was a long time. Yeah. It was a good deal.
Man, I drive into Chicago once and my anxiety goes through the roof.
Well, the funny part to me was then I stopped doing that uh-huh. and started a new business. And then I started driving to Chicago again.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. That just never ends. Do you remember some of the first people that you met here? You know, like as you're moving here and you're bringing a family here and thinking back about kind of your first impressions of a small town, because we talk a lot about small town. I always say it's the best small town in America because it is. Yeah. But do you remember some of those first people that...
Sure, sure. Well, you know, we met people through our kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how people do that,
right.
I think, everywhere. And so, you know, I've met your folks, you yep. know, and we'd be getting invited to, you know, the
4th of July parties.
4th of July parties.
And karaoke parties. He oh was so, God. I just as a side note, we'll get back to that. So every year we would have a 4th of July party out at my folks' house out on the river. Uh-huh. And they would, you know, they'd invite the Thorntons, obviously, and Matt and Kathy. And then as people were coming in, they would say, Matt Thornton's coming, right? Matt's coming to the karaoke party, right? And every year they'd say, Matt, sing this. And we'd, and like the whole crowd would be like, come on, you got it. Because he was the only one in the entire 100 people in attendance who could carry a tune. And
that's not true.
Well, it's pretty dang true.
Was there a
House of the House Rising of the, Sun.
House of the Rising yeah. Sun. They'd be like, Matt, sing House of the Rising Sun. He'd be like, I sing that every year. Sing it again.
Well, there you go. See, once I've been invited to one of those, we knew everybody in town. Yeah.
We won't make you do it now.
Thank right the Lord.
Now. It's so good.
So yeah, we mostly met through kids and yes. And the church, the Presbyterian church, mm-hmm. you know, that was where you met people
yeah.
and then the schools, you
sure.
know. So
did you find it to be a pretty welcoming town to new folks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, very friendly people. I really like Buchanan. I always have, you know, just got a good vibe to it. And it's been nice to see the town, you know, we moved in right at a time when the town was sort of shrinking a little bit.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then storefronts were closing here in the 90s, you know, and it, after Clark left, it was sort of, you know, there was a period of, I'll just say shrinking, you know, mm-hmm. and then to watch it build back up like it has been really nice. And we feel like we've been a part of that.
We know, absolutely too, have. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. So kind good. Of the end of the industrial town, I guess, in a way, right? Mm-hmm. With EV, Clark, a lot of the big
right.
manufacturing businesses, you know, it was kind of more mm-hmm. blue collar town with all the manufacturing companies and businesses. And when yeah. they started to shut down or move down south,
mm-hmm.
it was in the 90s, you know, it was a bit of a ghost town in a way. If you would go downtown, a lot of yeah, empty storefronts.
Any commodity that was being sold before, like shoes or clothes or that
yeah.
stuff, was long gone.
Long right. gone. And not yeah. really not really anything going on, you know, either. Not no concerts, no, you know, no right. gathering places, nothing at the center.
You probably never saw the streets filled at a Labor Day party, did you?
Right.
I think you might. Oh, sounds like
no.
you got there just after.
Just
right,
after
just
that
after
kind
that,
of
just
stuff.
After
right.
That.
No,
yeah.
it was failing. You know,
yes.
Shrinking.
Yes.
I don't want to say failing, you know, but
it was transitioning.
I mean, that's a common story
it is.
In America, yeah. you know.
Yeah, and a lot of towns don't come out of that, but we
right.
seem to have transformed into what this is something that you've said to me before that I love. You said we've become a town of makers. Buchanan
yeah.
is a town of makers, and I give you credit for coining that in your
oh, well.
But what do you mean by that? I think you're absolutely correct. So describe
well,
that.
You know, in lieu of manufacturers like Eve, you know, Electro Voice mm-hmm. or the Clark Equipment, you know, it's what do you do, you know? And then for a while the town sort of, you know, shrinks and the storefronts go empty. And like you said, there's no shoe store,
mm-hmm.
you know, like mm-hmm. there used to be a shoe store. You could buy clothes and things like that. And those kind of things go away, you know, and it hurts a small town. So what, you know, what happens, what I've seen happen is that it's kind of that wave goes by, and on the backside of that wave, you get creative people trying to come up with something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a really kind of a cool story that I feel involved with. You take the Clark Equipment plant, which is right downtown, you know, and I guess it had been Carbon Flower for a while.
Yes.
I mean, there were different people
yep.
through there, but then it sat empty, you know? And I even wrote a song about this. I have to record it someday. But it's like there was this factory floor. And then in the 30s, 40s, 50s, it was crammed with, you know, men and women working hard, making a good living, you know, and there was a bustling mm-hmm. community around it. And then it kind of faded out, you know. And you've got people like that would are now in there again. They're it's like Skunk Works, you know. They're my company's in there. There's another one, Rustica, that's in there, and we're in this old factory and we're making things out of, you know, recycled parts and mm-hmm. whatnot and selling them nationally,
right?
You know, and now that factory is working again. Now it's not working the way it did before. It's individual, you know, artists, creative people making things up, you
yes.
know, and that's what I kind of mean. It's hard to describe, but that's part of the story of it. And you got makers all over this town. We even had one of these festival events last year where we tried to highlight it.
Yeah.
And you find out, oh my gosh, there's a guy over here who makes knives. There's a guy over here who is a woodworker. there's several woodworkers who make really interesting and high-end furniture.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't even know, wow, that guy lives down the street, you know. So that kind of thing has happened in Buchanan, and Buchanan's getting a reputation for it.
You know? Yes.
And it's when you tie that with the part of the resurgence of the downtown, in my opinion, has been the influx of some antique dealerships, mm-hmm. right, over the last 10 mm-hmm. years. These guys have come in from Chicago and started, you know, selling high-end antiques. And in my business now, which I got out of the music business, I'm in a whole different world mm-hmm. now. It's I talk to a lot of designers and whatnot who do, you know, restaurants and do like home rehabs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And to them, Buchanan has this reputation of an artsy community of people who make things.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So where'd that come from? You know, that's
right.
kind of cool, I think.
It is. And I think you were on the ground level.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys, you know, but not the only one. I mean, there's
right.
several.
Absolutely.
And people who have been, you know, creating things. And even the Buchanan Art Center, you know, which is a nonprofit organization, but it's pretty well known, you mm-hmm. know. But all those things come together to at least start to paint a picture of a town that's, it's not a ghost town, you know. It's mm-hmm. maybe kind of a artsy place.
Yeah.
I've always thought it would be a good town for a branding agency or someone to have their second office when people start getting in a rut and they're stuck a little bit, to be able to go to their second office and walk around. Buchanan, you can see with every economic burst, you can see the architecture and the style of any industrial city.
Uh-huh.
Because we had a worldwide industrial manufacturer, more than one, based in a little town.
Right.
So we had a microcosm of the whole, a larger picture. And you'll see the 1800s houses, and then things dip. And then you see the 1920s. There's this big boom with World War One.
Interesting, yes.
The architecture, and then it'll pause. And then you'll have a World War II boom. And then you'll see the... On Google Earth, you can look and you can say, that neighborhood was built in the 60s. You
know? Right.
You can look from the sky and see
yes.
it. But a lot of different design influences, too. And
well, it'd be interesting to see what's going to be the next thing. You know, because mm-hmm. there's,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you, from a Google Earth point of view, mm-hmm. you know, are you seeing these, you know, developments, you know, where there's, you know, 20 houses or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, popping up in these areas around mm-hmm. small towns. One thing I would like to see is, and I think this is happening in Buchanan, is in Michigan, you see a lot of small towns where all of a sudden they get surrounded by like strip malls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't really have that here, and
no.
I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is to keep some of the character of the small town America alive. You know, that's something I would like to see keep going on.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I think that you and your family have contributed to that. So before we go into what you're doing now, I want to talk about what you and your daughter, Molly, your second daughter, what you guys did for the town that has kind of become an anchor, at least one of the anchors of the town. So I guess describe that project.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, as you know, it does follow along the story. You know, I had the Jingle Company in Chicago, and it was a great deal for me. It was really, really cool. And then I said before, it started to slow down, you know, and the industry started to change. And I was getting older, and I looked at it and said, boy, what's next? And at that time, my daughter Molly was running the Bruco, Mishawaka Brewing Company.
Yep.
And she wanted to get out of that, you know. And so we talked and said, boy, you know, in Buchanan, remember at that time, things had gotten smaller. Mm-hmm. Right, there's a lot of empty storefronts in town, but there was the beginnings of a feeling that, you know, 2009, you know,
yeah, that's when I just came back. You're
maybe
right.
Maybe something,
a little bit of energy
in here. You know, maybe mm-hmm. you know, life is gonna, you know, grow again in Buchanan, but there's no coffee house. There's no coffee shop in this town. You know, mm-hmm. oh my God, we need a coffee.
Yes, we did.
That's how it was.
And
so we started talking about that. And Molly is a foodie, you know, and so yeah, I said, you know, let's do this. And we stuck our necks out. We got the home equity loan.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have a lot of money. We're not rich. we didn't, you know, we went and on our own and put the coffee house downtown in the old Union Bank,
coolest which had been building.
On the corner.
Yeah.
Right. And that had been empty.
Yeah.
You know, for 10 years.
It had been a bank, then a stationery store, then right. empty forever.
It would have been actually, empty for a long time. Yeah.
It was my grandmother that owned the stationery store.
No way.
It was, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Because so when I was little, that was, I'd walk around.
You went there, in there.
Work with the art supplies and yeah.
There was still some of her stuff in there yeah, when we
she didn't when throw we cleaned anything
it
away. Up.
Yeah, right. No, it was interesting. And, mm-hmm. you know, back in 2009, or, you know, in the winter, Molly and I were on our hands and knees in there, you know, taking the old carpeting up and revealing, oh, my God, look at this beautiful tile that was under mm-hmm. here. And we did most of the work ourselves, you know. And then in 2010, we opened the Union Coffee House. And it's done well.
Better than you thought it would?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, it was scary. You know? Yeah. I mean, we don't make a ton of money. It's not that kind of deal. It's more of, but it's alive 8 years later. We're having our mm-hmm. eighth anniversary yeah. in a couple of weeks. And boy, in this world, that's kind of amazing. You know, we've seen a lot of places in Buchanan come and go during yes. that time, you know, mm-hmm. restaurants especially, because it's a hard way it's a hard row to hoe, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a family operation and you got to, you know, pour yourself into it and work that 68 hours a week and, you know, tighten your belt, you know, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's got a really great thing going there, I think.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And it's become, you know, thank you for saying anchor. That's really nice. It's become the meeting place.
It is.
You know, and we're very happy. Molly's a foodie, you know, on top of the coffee and, she's kind of come into her own.
Food is amazing.
Yeah, of making real interesting stuff.
Just amazing
really good food, and so yeah, that's been a really nice
yeah
thing for us.
And it's, I think that is so. When I moved back to Buchanan, I was gone for 10 years or so after uh-huh. high school. Moved back in 2008 to start teaching. I remember coming back thinking, wait, this isn't the town I left 10 years ago. Right. There's something happening here.
Something happened.
There's some energy. There's some stuff going on. And I think yeah. with the introduction of the with the coffee house, it was a little bit, at least for people who had moved back, who had maybe gone and lived in cities, it was like, I mean, we're getting our own coffee house. We're getting a little bit of culture here
right.
in downtown. Like it made us kind of feel connected to like our college years or our early professions where we were like living it up in cities. Like, all right, we got our own place like this. We have our own local coffee house.
Cool place, yeah.
A cool place. There we had a cool place
that I can get in a city.
Yeah, it's and the
yeah.
high end coffee.
Yes.
That you get in the other mm-hmm. places.
In a cool environment yeah. And local. And I think that's really when the whole idea of shop local and eat local and support local
yeah.
was really taking off as well, you know? So I think all those things contributed. And then the things that you guys did in the coffee house to encourage people to meet there. So I take lots of my clients there. If I ever have meetings, that's where you meet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what were some of those intentional things that you did to make it a welcoming place like that?
Well, you know, Molly was the market, the farmer's market master.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first one. When it was first put up in Buchanan, the first farmer's market master was Molly. She ran it for a couple, 3 years. And she brought a lot of that mentality to the coffee house. She was the first person I ever heard say those, you know, shop local.
Yes, food, she was.
Farm to food, you know.
Yep, farm market, to table or whatever, table. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was way ahead of that stuff.
For sure.
You know, and laying for it, you know, in her own place. And we, to this day, still in the winter, you know, we have Hebron Farms from the,
yep.
you know, they come in, on Saturdays, they come the back of the Union Coffee House is the farmer's market.
Yes.
You know? So that's a lot of it right there, is that kind of mentality. And then boy, she had all these cool events, like, you know, the art things, like come and draw this thing. With
yes,
the
only
artist.
Place I've ever been able to actually draw something that
right.
looks like what it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for a long time, we did folk music in there.
Yeah.
And that was in a cool thing that helped establish
every Sunday.
It. Yep. And have special concerts from touring musicians that I've met over my life. And that, you know, that really helped put us on the map, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, Molly is tireless. And then the baristas, the young ladies and men that work there, you know, they keep coming up with cool ideas just to do it. Even, you know, like Dave Pagel comes by and has his office hours there. Yeah. You know, the state rep, you know. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, that was kind of like, we've arrived.
Yes.
When the politicians are calling, say, can I come by, you know, and have my office hours in your own place? I go, yeah, okay, yes, you can.
It's good for everybody.
Yeah, it's good for everybody. Yeah. We want to hear what you have to say, you know. And we've had meetings there of people who, you know, farmers, co-ops and stuff like that. So I feel it really does carry the small town vibe.
For sure.
Strongly, you know. And in a way, you know, what we've done, I think, is tried to find a path back to small town life. You know, as America has accelerated and the strip malls take over and the, you know, I think small town life got kind of rolled under the sod a little bit, you know. So one of the things we think about often is how do we get people to stop their car in the town, you know, instead of, you know, being in the drive through line at McDonald's for 15 minutes, you know, why don't you stop downtown and get out of your car and see some people and try to rebuild that small town community feel. And it's slowly happening.
I think so. I mean, it's difficult to find a parking spot downtown during lunchtime.
Well, good.
Isn't it? I mean, there are, well, and especially like in the morning when I need my Bucktown Fog coffee.
You need your,
or my toasted maple nut. You know, sometimes I gotta park all the way down by B&W, you know? Goodness. Right? And walk.
I heard there was a major disruption when Gary Z's was closed the other day.
Yeah, well,
somebody was sick, everybody.
When Mariah was sick and Gary Z's was closed, she posted on Facebook. Everyone was like, oh, Mariah, we hope you feel better, but what are we going to do without you?
Right. Well, I like that small town mentality. That works for me.
Yeah. So
you probably had a bump that day.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. <That's>
right. Sorry, Mariah.
We got your back.
So isn't it funny, though, that there are the, I mean, it's, one of the reasons why we wanted to do this podcast is obviously to talk to people from our town and kind of highlight that. But I grew up listening to Garrison Keillor and Lake Wobegon stories.
Sure, sure.
Which Lake Wobegon didn't really exist, but it did in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so Buchanan to me is kind of like a Lake Wobegon that does exist.
Well, it's the ideal exists, you know.
Mm-hmm, the and idea exists.
I'd like to see that ideal come back, you know, to people.
Yeah, yeah. Especially during this time, right, where social media or where you're not picking up the phone to call somebody, you're just texting and there's all this very quick interaction. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a smaller town or even with this podcast, it's a little bit deeper, a little bit more personal.
Yeah, a little less superficial. Yeah. Good for you. Good on you for doing this.
Well, we're trying.
Yeah. We're going to do it.
That's right.
Whatever it is.
So in that coffee house, though, a lot of that, a lot of the furniture is also made by you.
Well, isn't that funny?
Uh-huh.
Because here's the next part of the story.
Yes. You
know, as the story goes on. My jingle business, I closed it out, you know, and then I was going, all right, what am I going to do now? You know, the coffee house is up and running and it, you know, my daughter doesn't want me there.
You have office hours there sometimes. I see
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I'm there more than she wants. And no, she loves me. It's all funny. But you know.
We know.
I am not that. Yeah, I'm not really the one you want making your coffee.
Yeah, I had a little twist here.
I don't know if I've ever seen you behind the counter. There's a reason why they make you stay out at the tables.
Politely asked to step away from the brewer and the espresso machine.
Yes.
Step away from the food, sir. We love you. But when we were building it out, I said, you know, we did most of the work ourselves, you know, because we didn't have any money. You know, we're local. We're not McDonald's, you know. We made the countertops out of zinc. It was just an oddball thing we saw. A friend of ours said, hey, you should look at this. And I saw a YouTube video, you know, and went, oh, I could do that.
Right.
You know? And it's basically you make the countertops out of plywood like you would normally. instead of putting formica or something on it, you take sheet metal and wrap the sheet metal around. Mm-hmm. And we did that. And strangely enough, some designer came in mm-hmm. to the coffee house and said, oh, where'd you get these zinc countertops? And my daughter goes, well, my dad made them. Would he make some for me? Probably, you know. And I did. I met this person I did, and we made some bar tops for this house on the lake shore, on a big lake. And strangely enough, this has kind of blown into this new company, you know. I mean, what? Yes. You know, we now, myself and Andy, we have a shop in the Clark Building, right? And we're one of those creative Skunk Works guys, and we make stuff. And mm-hmm. what we make is zinc countertops, zinc bars, mm-hmm. and now we've gotten into making range hoods that you know, for going over the you know, your cooktop, and that's our cool new thing. And you know, I mean, the insane news is that we sell stuff all over the country.
Yeah,
we ship out. We're shipping out a desk that we made. Tomorrow, we're shipping it to Florida. We have made bars in, you know, Chicago, Las Vegas, Baltimore, you know, what? You know,
right.
Boston, you know, there's stuff all over the country that, you know, LA, you know.
How is your name being spread? What kind of outlets?
Well, the company's called Zinksmith. Because mm-hmm. we kind of go around with zinc, and we have a website, and we have an Etsy store.
Okay.
And then I think a lot of it is word of mouth through designers, you know, okay. and it's a niche. Mm-hmm. The zinc thing is pretty cool. It's very popular right now. And we were kind of firstest with the mostest, you know, yep. we just did it. All right. And I don't know anybody else who's ever done that. It just said, I'm going to just work with this material and learn how to do it, you know, and mm-hmm. we did, you know, we did our homework, and there's hardly any other companies that specialize in it. So when it comes around, like we built out a huge bar in Chicago called Barrio this last year. And it's got a 50-foot copper bar in it and another zinc bar in it. And they came to us because, you know, we're just those oddball guys who do those things, right. you know? So yeah, that's it. It's a really cool part of the story because it did grow directly out of the coffee house. And it became my new career. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'd always been a woodworker for fun, you know, it was my hobby. But then it turned around and people say I live my life backwards. You know, I keep taking my jobs, you know, or my hobbies and turning them into jobs.
Yeah.
You know? I was a guitar player when I was in high school, you know, and so then I became a musician and did jingles for 25 years uh-huh. or something, you know. And then I was a woodworker as my hobby, and now it's my job, you know. So this, I don't know what's next. Yeah. But
it also seems like you would, because I think a lot of people might really enjoy doing those things, but then they... figuring out how to turn it into money, you know, you had opportunities and you saw them, and you must have had some good timing here and there to kind of pull those things together. There are a lot of people working in their garages making really wonderful things who don't right. make that transition.
Right.
You know, how did you do that?
It's pure luck.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think you get lucky at that many things in life.
We've been very lucky, uh-huh. you know, I've been lucky
sure.
and, my eyes are open, uh-huh. you know, mm-hmm. and I try hard, mm-hmm. you know, and let's strike a blow for the American work ethic here.
That's right.
This is not for the faint of heart, what we do. I work 60 hours a week at least, and I'm 64 years old, mm-hmm. you know, there it is. You got to work your tail off in this world.
It wasn't just a YouTube video. It was, there were some hours and hours.
Trial and error.
Mistakes and trial and error.
And it's cool that you pointed out because you have to do so many things when you work for yourself. You know, the Skunk Works thing, you know, there isn't, you know, I don't get a paycheck. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have a secretary. There isn't anybody doing your, you know, work for you, you know, setting mm-hmm. you up, you know. You got to do everything yourself. You got to do all your accounting. You got to do, you know, you need a stamp. You got to go get a stamp, you know. So all those things have to be done, and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you do it, you know. I mean, the alternative was probably never going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
The getting a job and punching a clock or having a boss, you know, I probably wasn't going to be very good at that.
Yeah.
You know,
why do you think that? I agree with you.
Don't
but
know.
Why do you think
you know,
that?
I don't like being told what to do. You know,
it was part of the avoidance of that. Something that drove you.
You think? Yeah. You know.
Well, and creative minds like yourself, I'm sure that can become a hindrance.
Right. I'd do anything but have to punch that clock.
Right. I'm wondering, was there a time when you were punching the clock, and the whole time you were thinking, "Oh man, I got to turn this."
Well, when I worked at the ad agency,
yeah,
I wanted to get out of there horribly, you know.
Deadlines, a lot of pressure. Yeah.
Well, none of that has ever gone away, but it's even worse now because now you're on your own. You
right.
know? But there's the freedom of it, mm-hmm. you know. This is the funny part. It's the freedom. I don't work for the man, right?
Yeah.
You know. So instead, I work 80 hours a week.
You know? That means you are the man.
But I, in my own mind...
Yeah,
right.
I am the man. Right? Oh my God, I think part of it too, though, is for creative people. A lot of times, I know you know this, Stacey, as an athlete, you get in the zone, right? Mm-hmm. You can get into that creative thing, whether you want to call it right brain or anything else, where you kind of you lose time, mm-hmm. right? It's like okay. Mm-hmm. And I love working with my hands, and whether that was, you know, playing the piano or the or guitar or writing a piece of music or taking a piece of metal and banging the crap out of it with a hammer, you know, you can lose yourself in that. And I think that the pursuit of being in the zone has probably been a touchstone for me my whole life.
Sure.
You know? And it's like, okay, that's how I want to make my living, you know, and I want to be honest about my living and true and not... You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not trying to get anything over on somebody else. I'm not trying to make a profit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although a profit would be nice.
Would be nice.
You know, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah. Well, it's the pursuit of the passion, too.
Yeah, and simplicity, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, I'm a church-going kind of guy, and I believe in that, a lot of that. Meek will inherit the earth and, you know, do the right thing. And, you know, and I'd like to say that my children... show it.
Yeah.
You know, their lives have been good. And, you know, so deep down inside, I don't know how I turned that corner, you know, in this conversation, but it is all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pursue your art in a moral fashion, you know, and then you try to build a beautiful life if you can. And the small town, oh, wow, I'm going to tie this up.
I
nice.
Love it.
And the small town thing is where my passion is and my heart is.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the fact that I can go down to my old rehabbed factory and make something. And then it's going to, I'm going to be able to sell it to somebody. It's going to be a beautiful thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to help me, you know, live and support myself and my family and my town.
Right.
And feel good about that.
Yeah.
You know, and feel like okay, I can face the creator saying, yeah, I did right.
Yeah.
You know, that's all part.
So, yeah, well, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me. It was really cool what you're doing, and you know, keep doing it.
Yeah, we're having a good time doing it, and we think it's important that these stories of these incredible folks in our hometown are preserved in some way, you know, especially in this kind of throwaway culture, I guess you would say, where you take a picture on Snapchat and it's gone. See? I'm not even, I'm so
that.
Not cool.
I'm old and I know about Snapchat.
I said Snapchat. You know what I mean, kids? You know, we're
sued for any copyright.
Goodness, God. Showing my lack of coolness. You know, if my son listens to this, he's going to be like, oh my God, Mom, seriously?
Yeah. They do that.
Yeah. So
that's your job.
Trying to preserve, or I guess bring it back. To that small town mentality.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us again. And for all of our listeners, we really appreciate you pulling up a chair to the fire here, Firekeeper's Memories, and settling in with us and listening to the story of Matt Thornton.
Oh, thank you. That was really cool.
It was pretty fun. So. Really nice. So we hope you join us again next week.
Thank you.
Pat says thank you, and he wants you to come back as well.
Thank you,
week.
Pat.
Yeah, come back.
Come back. He'll be here. He'll be here.
You
we'll
keep
be
the
here.
Fire. We'll bring the stories.
All right. See you later, everybody.